Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, Thursday style. Glad to have you here. So good to get Congressman and candidate for U.S. Senate Mo Brooks on the air with us to talk about the Senate campaign, but also I can't have this conversation with Representative Brooks right now without thinking back to, well, June of 2017, and I was sitting right here in this chair during the morning show, and I was contacted by the congressman who was on a baseball field in Alexandria, Virginia at that time. Congressman, let's talk about that. Welcome to the show. Glad to get you back on, and I want to talk about that day with you.
My pleasure.
It is I see the story that comes out that the FBI qualifies dirtbags shooting attempted murder spree on the baseball field as suicide by cop and not domestic terrorism. I'm left scratching my head, but most importantly, I wanted to hear from you, who was on the baseball field that day as dirtbag starts gunning down members of Congress on that field.
Well, fortunately, the Virginia law enforcement community designated as domestic terrorism, which is what it was. It's politically motivated. No way in the world was it suicide by cop. If so, he wouldn't have shot five other people in the process. But here is some of the evidence that suggests very, very compellingly that it was an effort to attack Republican congressmen. First, he's a Bernie Sanders socialist. Second, he actually went to Bernie Sanders' Senate office up on Capitol Hill. Third, when he was at the ballpark, he made sure to ask one of our congressmen if that was the Republican or Democrat baseball team, presumably because he wanted to shoot the Republicans but not the Democrats. Fourth, he then went to his van and pulled out his weaponry, at least one rifle and at least one pistol and a whole bunch of ammo. Then next, he shot over 100 bullets at the Republican baseball team, including the staffers that were there that were helping us, and including two Capitol Police officers who were there, both of whom got hit. So he did hit a total of five. Next item of evidence in his pocket was his assassination list. Six Republicans had our office numbers, had our names, had our physical descriptions. I was one of those six. It is unfathomable that this was anything other than a political assassination attempt and terrorism. Yet the FBI seems to have been penetrated by socialists to some degree. I'm not sure how great of a degree, but instead of ruling it what it was, the FBI chose to call it suicide by cop.
Congressman, your day, I mean, you go by it like you do factually, but I'm going to take you back there. Not only had you been shot at and watched fellow members of Congress and friends that had been hit and what was being done to save their lives. And I think, you know, people think about Steve Scalise a lot here, but Steve Scalise and others that were hit in this. But then you find out later what you just said. Your name was on a list to kill, like a shopping list here, but a killing list, and there your name was. It was specifically on there as somebody he was going to kill because of your politics.
Yep. It was a handwritten note. I saw it.
Every time I think about that, it puts a chill on me and imagine what it must be like to be you and see that. So it is interesting to get your take on this because I heard that and I said, I'm going to reserve, I mean, I know what I feel, but I want to hear from you on that. And have you talked to any other of the folks that were there that day and their reaction to hearing this called suicide by cop and not domestic terrorism?
Well, we were informed of this back in 2017 and we were angry and upset. And I personally argued with the FBI agents in the meeting that I was in, saying, look, I'm a former prosecutor. I know what evidence is. No way in the world is this what you say it was. It was a politically motivated assassination attempt against members of the United States Congress, nothing less. And they just have nothing of it. They just kind of blew that off.
And that is, I mean, and to come kill the people on that list was to kill those people and then to terrorize anybody else who would have those same beliefs, right? I mean, that's terrorism.
That is, absolutely. It's the definition. I'm very, very concerned that the socialist elements have infiltrated a significant number of our departments and agencies of the federal government. I'm not sure how best to correct what has been going on, but it has been going on for some time. Not only the United States government, but also political action committees that normally would give to conservatives. They've been taken over to some degree by socialist elements of society. And of course, you've seen what has happened in the United States Congress. The socialists now are in control of the House and the Senate, and they certainly have a tremendous amount of sway with Joe Biden in the White House. And there are probably some number of socialists in the White House, too. I just don't know how many. I don't know how to quantify that.
Yeah, but the idea that somebody has different beliefs than you doesn't, it's not the same to me, right? I mean, that there would be people who say, well, I sure don't like that Alabama congressman's political beliefs, but I'm sitting here and I've got to qualify something as domestic terrorism or suicide by cop. Even if I don't like your political beliefs, Congressman Brooks, it is what it is. And you, if you're going to qualify when McVeigh bombed the Murrow Building or any other items as domestic terrorism, then you have to, by definition, define this the same way. And like you pointed out, Virginia did the same, other agencies did the same thing, but not the Bureau.
Cut and dried from a law enforcement perspective, it is unfathomable to me that the FBI has taken the position that it's taken, and that when confronted most recently by Brad Winstrup, who, by the way, was the combat surgeon that probably saved Steve Scalise's life, certainly I would not have applied any pressure to Steve Scalise's wound in his left hip, but for the instructions of Brad Winstrup. I don't know if that helped or hurt, but I'll tell you, I was scared to death of doing more damage by touching
Steve Scalise in that area.
Yeah. But Brad Winstrup persuaded me that that's what needed to be done in order to help reduce the blood flow.
Yeah, and we still have Steve Scalise today because of that. Just remembering that day and remembering you talking about when you came on the air with us, at that point the chopper was just leaving, right? With Scalise, they were just moving him out. And it wasn't, we had no idea if he would even make it.
And he made it just by minutes. If he had been a little bit 5-10 minutes slower getting to the hospital, he would not have survived.
So I know there's a lot we need to talk about, but I had to talk about that with you beforehand because I wanted to hear from you after hearing.
May I give a little footnote?
Yeah.
Today, Steve Scalise and I were on the ball field practicing for
were
the
you
congressional
really?
Baseball team that raises over $1 million for charity each year. And Steve's gotten quite a bit more mobile. He's still not as mobile as he was before the shooting, but I want to report that he's doing much better.
That's great news. That is great news. I know that hearing from you and other members of the Alabama delegation that his mind when he got back was still there. It was still the same Steve Scalise, but watching his body having to heal from just a pelvis that was destroyed and all that is it's good to hear. He was out on the field today. That's great. That's great. I didn't know that.
He was practicing at second base. I was practicing at first base. I've been the starter on the baseball team. At first base for a couple of years. I'd add one caveat. I do have one beef with Steve Scalise. He keeps wearing all this LSU stuff.
That's right. I tell you what, your political dexterity will be at the penultimate if you can get a picture of Steve Scalise wearing some crimson. I will be. I'll say that is the best ever. So let's talk about the politics and the politics of what's going on right now in Washington, and also the concurrent campaign you have for Senate. So I saw this bill, and maybe you can explain some details to us about this. The bill that exposes foreign influence in college and university education. Now, is this because we've talked about Confucius Institute on this show a couple times over the last year or so. Does this take that into account as well?
Absolutely. It would affect the Confucius Institutes. We've had 40 some odd universities in various states out of a sense of patriotism shut down their Confucius Institutes. We've been able to persuade Alabama A&M, which is right next door to Research Park, where we have a lot of classified national security work being conducted. A&M just recently has announced that they are shutting down their Confucius Institute. The only one left in Alabama is at Troy University. And I don't understand what the problem is at Troy University, wherein they would allow the Communist Chinese Party to have a Confucius Institute that is used for political propaganda purposes and sometimes espionage. Now, I say that in a general sense about Confucius Institutes.
Yeah, and how do, I guess people that have not followed it when we've talked about it, it works how? They fund it, the Chinese, the Communist Chinese come in and is it an endowment or how do they run this?
The Communist Chinese Party puts money in the hands of the universities and they get the permission of the universities to set up their Confucius Institutes. And on the surface, they're nice. That's supposed to be the cover. Hey, learn about China. We're nice people. That's part of the propaganda side of it. But to the extent that they can use these institutes for espionage purposes or basis of operation for Communist Chinese Party spies, they'll do it.
So what in this Zero Foreign Influence in Education Act, how do you fix that? How do you go after it? Kind of give it in language I can understand. What's in this bill?
We shine daylight on it. If you are a university or a college and you receive money from a foreign entity, you have to publicly disclose it so that anybody can question it and examine it and determine whether it's benign and innocuous or something dangerous.
Okay, so it's going to be, it's something that we could, they're going to post up somewhere. We can say, this group donated X number of dollars to this university.
That is correct.
What about,
focusing on the Chinese Communist Party. Let me emphasize something. Roughly 90% of the Communist China people are slaves to the 10% that are members of the Communist Chinese Party. The Communist Chinese Party dictates to their slaves what they have to do and when they have to do it, where they have to go to do it. There's interesting news that came out today by way of example that conclusively establishes that the Communist Chinese Party slaves are building these solar panels that in turn they want to sell to Americans and others. Well, do we really want to be the beneficiaries of slave labor? But that's the way it is if it comes from China. There's not liberty and freedom over there. There's not any provision in the Bill of Rights that the Communist Chinese Party accepts with the possible exception of the right to a speedy trial. But you got to understand what they're talking about over in Communist China when they talk about a speedy trial. You get arrested in the afternoon, you get tried sometime in the evening, and you're shot at dawn.
It's a little too speedy. I think that
it's a pretty rough environment. They're not a republic. They do not allow elections. You know, and let's look at it as a two-way street. If they're going to come over here and use Confucius Institutes as propaganda sources for their way of life, then by golly, they allow us to put Washington and Jefferson Institutes on Chinese soil, where we talk about liberty, we talk about our Bill of Rights, we talk about democracy and elections. But of course, Communist Chinese Party won't allow us to do in China what the Communist Chinese Party insists on doing in America. Fortunately, in Alabama, though, we're down to just Troy. That's the only one that still is supporting the Communist Chinese Party.
But outside of Alabama, there are these Confucius Institutes as well, right? It's not just here.
There are some, although over 40 of them have been shut down by patriotic universities and states. Once there was recognition as to how bad they are, others have shut them down.
And you wonder what kind of legacy there is. Are there people implanted, you know, from those that do they all leave? Anybody involved in the institute, or do they stay? How does that work?
That's a very good question. All I can tell you is that it's nefarious, and perhaps the best way to address this that people can understand, does anybody believe that the Communist Chinese Party is spending these large sums of money in America out of friendship because they want to advance and help America? Or do you believe that they're doing it for their own personal benefit and gain, as they've done with so many other things, starting with the COVID-19?
Now, the question about COVID-19, the source point for that, you know, that's been, it's come back up in a discussion. It's one that I thought that we had talked about a lot in the past on this show, but this question of it's, you know, how engineered, was it engineered? Was it completely wild, this COVID that left China?
It was not wild. It was engineered. It was manufactured or altered to be what it became at the Wuhan Bioweapons Lab. And the only real question is whether it was released accidentally or on purpose.
Seems to me, look at that, I would think accidentally. I don't have near the information you do, but the fact that they let it hit their people at all, right? That to me makes it seem it was a mistake. But I don't know. It might be several layers of distraction on that.
I think that's the highest probability, but you can't discount the other possibility.
I want to talk about your campaign now for Senate. Let me ask you this way. So I look down on my Twitter feed here at FM Talk 106.5. And, you know, when you come on the show with me, I am inundated with people saying, not from around here, but people calling you everything but a child of God. What is it about you that makes you such a lightning rod here? Why is it that your name on a Twitter feed or any of our social media platforms brings in legions of people from outside of Alabama screaming bloody murder about you?
Because I am a principled thought leader in Washington, D.C., in the United States Congress. I'm willing to stand up and fight these dadgum socialists, no matter the personal risk or cost, and the socialists don't like it. They expect you to cower. The fake news media expects you to cower. And I'm not about to cower. My ancestors, your ancestors, didn't cower. Our ancestors fought to make America the greatest nation in world history, and I'm not about to give it up without a fight.
Let's talk about that fight. Let's talk about the fight right now in the House, and then going forward, what could be your fight in the Senate. How do you win this? I mean, how do you win this other than just saying, you know, I'm in the right, you're in the wrong? You can't just, I mean, there's got to be another route here. You got to offer better ideas, right? You got to do something. I'm not talking about here in Alabama, but in the battle that is the bicameral battle there, whether you're in the House or you're doing this in the Senate.
You have to offer evidence and information that helps voters understand who is in the right and who is in the wrong. So that means that you as a candidate must be able to explain to voters simple things such as America is the greatest nation in world history, and describe what it is that causes you to reach that conclusion, and then explain to voters what principles there are that have combined collectively to make us the greatest nation in world history, and then urge voters to help defend and protect those foundational principles, which unfortunately are under attack by the Socialist Democrats on a daily basis.
How is it?
So the Socialist Democrats are only mad at me because I'm potent. If I was impotent, they wouldn't care. But I'm making inroads with voters and citizens around the United States of America, and for that matter, sometimes outside of the United States of America, because for whatever reason, it seems that I've been blessed with the ability to communicate on public policy issues in a way that voters get it.
And how does that, and I follow you, but how does that compete in a national stage? I'm not talking about the Senate race here, you know, in Alabama, but on the national stage in Washington, how does that compete with a bunch of other politicians that are saying that they're going to fix this problem for you, they're going to you know, fix your money, your health care, your job, they're going to make sure there's gas at the pumps. How do you fight that?
Well, I'm not going to say it's easy, and I'm not going to say you're always going to win in the communication war, but you've got to do your part. You know, there are 535 congressmen and senators, and you're one out of 535. Then you've got the bully pulpit of the White House. Gosh, the president, if he wants to get a message out, he's better positioned to do it better than anybody. Then come senators, and then in Washington, congressmen are at the bottom of the totem pole because there are so many of us. One out of 435 congressmen, that's how much weight you have, how much influence you have with your vote. So you have to do everything you can within the realm of the setting that you're in. Okay, I'm in a particular ballpark right now. It's the House of Representatives ballpark. And I do what I'm doing right now with you. I try to communicate on public policy issues in a way that the voters can understand who's right and who's wrong, and who they need to support and who they need to oppose at the next election.
Congressman, we appreciate your time, and if people want to get more information, which is pretty good, that you'll come on and give that information, but they want to go online, get more information about the Senate race, where do they find you?
They go to mobrooks.com. Very simple, mobrooks.com.
All right, Congressman, good to talk to you today, and we'll be talking again soon.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a blessed day.
You too. There he is, Congressman, a candidate for U.S. Senate, Mo Brooks, with us on Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.